south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, before I get rolling on any new topics, whatever they're going to turn out to be, I mean, let's face it, one minute I could be talking about colostomy bags, and the next minute, politicians. Wait a minute, same thing. That's redundant, right? Anyway, if you remember a few shows ago, I was talking about how Monsanto had swept through Latin America with big conventions, giving out freebies, etc. at big hotels, buying off politicians with champagne and limos and dancing girls, you name it. I'm not kidding. And they did that backdoor lobbying, which is totally legal here, with impunity as usual. And why is that? Well, there's no law against paying off a politician, by the way, here in Latin America. Anything goes when it comes to scumbag politicians. You could hand over a suitcase with $1 million in it, and even if it was caught right on camera, well, you know what? You wouldn't even see it on the 6 o'clock news because, well, it's not news. So then why was that Monsanto entourage coming down here through Latin America, kissing up to every fat-ass politician in sight? Well, of course, it was just so they'd vote in that so-called Monsanto law. Remember that? It was that tiny little addition to that free trade agreement that was successfully voted on in 2006. Now, if you remember, I mentioned that certain indigenous groups who are local farmers somehow got organized into boycotting and picketing, etc. And surprisingly enough, with virtually no big money, they've made great headway against Monsanto. And of course, against their own fat-ass scumbag politicians. And you know, it never really dawns on those indigenous folks that those same guys are the very crooks they keep voting into office. And you know, all it takes is a free t-shirt, a bag of rice, or a free Happy Meal. I've seen it myself. Busloads coming in from the boonies just filled with indigenous people at election time. And as they get off, they're all wearing free t-shirts with a certain party's colors and or toting a Happy Meal or a box of chicken licking. But I digress as usual. Now, one thing us expats have noticed, this activism that's coming out of the indigenous communities against this Monsanto law seems to be 100% focused on the penalties and the fines in Monsanto's favor. You know, if you're caught with their genetically engineered seed, for example, unknowingly mixed in with a traditional crop and such, etc., etc., then you get hammered with a big fine. But no one's mentioned the fact, and you see almost no publicity mentioning the dangers of ingesting GMO foods. Now, unfortunately, the fact is, when you speak to any Latin person about the dangers of GMOs, now this might seem cruel and oversimplified, but believe me, you're talking way over their heads. What you have to remember is that the average Latin person has about a 6th to 8th grade education, even less when you're talking about indigenous farmers in the boonies. And believe it or not, practically all farmers down here believe that if you tack a pair of red women's underwear to a tree that's underproducing, the tree will be embarrassed into producing more the next year. So that's what you're dealing with. So believe me, trying to explain the health effects of GMOs is, to put it mildly, pointless. So how it works is like this. In order to get simple indigenous people to act, it had to be a threat to their meager existence. It had to be about the money. Because, you see, as one activist told me, by the way, a university-educated indigenous guy, and there are some of those, you know. He says, as far as his constituents are concerned, you show them a grain of corn that's GMO, and you show them a grain of corn that's been grown traditionally, they'll pick the GMO one every time because it's often bigger. You try to explain to them that it's not a healthy choice, and, well, it's a pretty hard sell. But hit them in their meager pocketbooks, and you can roust them in a hurry. Now, what you have to remember is that in Latin America, there are about 600 different indigenous tribes. That's right, 600. And you know, they really don't get along that well. Not that they war with each other or behead each other or steal each other's women or anything like that. Though, that did go on before the Spanish came. That is, before Columbus and his buddies beat, murdered, and raped them into becoming civilized Christians. Yeah, right. That said, even in the 21st century, indigenous tribes in Latin America do not get along well with each other. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're hostile towards each other. It's just that they're resistant to certain social interminglings, like mixed marriages and such. And that's why, even though indigenous populations in many Latin countries actually have the numbers and the voting power to put in their own presidents, vice presidents, and entire Congress, as well as mayors and governors, etc. Unfortunately, you just don't see that except at the local level. You know, mayor, city councilman, dog catcher. Well, I take that back. They don't have dog catchers in Latin America, but they should. Anyway, at the national level, indigenous people, even though they've got the numbers, have almost no representation, except in a very few special cases where the indigenous population is more or less of one or many related tribes, like, for example, in Bolivia and Ecuador. Otherwise, when a Latin country has many different indigenous tribes that have been separated geographically for many dozens of generations, then they just can't unite and get it together. The fact is, they just won't go out and vote for someone from a different tribe. Unless, of course, he or she is handing out free t-shirts, happy meals, or sacks of rice. But alas, indigenous candidates just don't have that kind of dough. However, in this case, the Monsanto situation, due to some college-educated indigenous folks, they actually did manage to roust up many tribes for a common cause. So it's good to know that indigenous folks have been able to protect their age-old planting practices, and that they're actually winning against big corporate interests like Monsanto. Now, of course, everyone down here with an IQ larger than George Bush Jr.'s knows that when Monsanto came through and gave away all these freebies and put on these big conventions, the word on the street was that they handed out plenty of giveaways and bribes. I mean, that's how you do things in Latin America, and no one ever gets busted for it. Ever. And if a politician is too blatantly gluttonous and gets called on it, they just retire to their million-dollar estates and ranches and never give the money back. Which is why everyone and his brother down here wants to be a politician or work for government. Sound familiar? So bribes flew and the Monsanto law got passed. At first, anyway. But the indigenous tribes, for once, organized and showed their muscle. And the first country they did it in was Guatemala. Their protests, roadblocks, and work stoppages throughout the country resulted in an emergency session in Congress to rescind the law. And that just happened about 2 weeks ago. So, three cheers for Guatemala's indigenous people. The first, to spit in Monsanto's eye and get away with it. Now, you know, I can always count on expat Eddie to throw a twist into any conversation. Just the other day, we were talking about the indigenous victory over Monsanto, and Eddie said, well, you know, the battle is won, but I think the war is lost. So, what did he mean by that? As you know, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, expat Eddie has a lot of restaurants in Latin America and therefore a lot of employees. Many who are young, hard-working, indigenous guys and gals. Some right off the farm that have made their way from the boonies to the big city looking for work. And you know, expat Eddie tells me that if an employee comes to work for a full month, doesn't miss a day, and is never late, he'll give him a $10 bonus. And you know, that's like a full day's pay in a country where the average wage is like $250 a month. Anyway, Eddie's introduced U.S. business incentives like bonuses for being on time and such. Since, like he says, the biggest headache that he has with the local help down here is that they just have no concept of being on time. And since being on mañana time is a Latin American national trait, employees here never feel the stress or the pressure or the guilt when they're late. Nope, not like we do, us gringos, when we're late for something. And why should they? Because Latin bosses in Latin firms are just as lax and late too. Oh, and by the way, I know quite a few gringos who teach English at private schools down here, and one of them who's been teaching down here maybe 14 years, he told me that one of the big differences between private and public grade schools and high schools, for example, is that at wealthy private schools, maybe a quarter to a third of the staff are actual gringo teachers like him, and they just don't tolerate tardiness and take no excuse for it. So, from day one, they set the first world example, as they should, by cracking the whip on people who are late. So that very slim percentage, about 2 to 5% of locals who go to wealthy private schools, they know all about being on time and they'll comply. Why? Because it was whipped into them when they went to private school. By who? Pissed off and highly annoyed gringo teachers. But at those free public universities and junior high schools, etc., there's no such urgency or discipline at all. So, like Expat Eddie said, if he's hiring a manager, someone who needs a college degree in, let's say, accounting or business administration or whatever, he knows right away by looking at their resume, that is, if they came from a public or a private school, whether they're going to be on mañana time or not. And like Eddie says, a good, solid, dependable worker can come from a private or a public school. But he'd rather not have to beat the mañana time attitude out of a public school kid. Oh, and let me tell you, that's not the only bad habit that public school kids have. In fact, Latin kids in general have one huge problem. They absolutely do not know how to organize themselves. That includes their desks and their closets and their houses and their filing systems. I should really say, what filing systems? And that, by the way, is why the word maintenance is not in your average Latin's vocabulary. And it's not that they can't learn. They learn in a hurry as long as you give them some incentive and crack the whip. But when left to their own devices, you can see right away why we talk about the gringo advantage and why when the only competition we have in business is Latin competition, we simply clean up. Oh, and while we're on that subject of hiring, Eddie says when he hires a manager or someone for an office or clerical position, and he sees that they've graduated from an expensive private school, he tells me he finds they really are more organized and have much less of the mañana time mentality because a good percentage of their teachers were gringos. However, he said he's always got another problem on his hands, one he doesn't have with public school graduates. That is, private school kids have an attitude, an uppity attitude, towards the so-called lower classes, the poor, the middle class, and the indigenous. And that attitude extends to people who live in certain undesirable areas, people who ride public transportation, therefore do not have cars, and they look down a bit on people who don't have high-end cell phones, believe it or not. In fact, when middle class, upper middle class, and wealthy Latins notice a gringo like myself, who's got a $15 or $20 throwaway cell phone, instead of the latest $500 piece of eye crap, the locals just don't get it. They don't understand. Because, you know, they think that every one of us gringos is wealthy, at least by their standards, and by that measure, I guess we are, actually. That said, they believe we can afford the latest and greatest of everything, including designer clothes, bling bling, and smartphones. And get this, I've often overheard local Latins talking to themselves, in Spanish, of course, commenting about a gringo like me, for example, or other low-key expats who don't fit their stereotype, wondering to themselves why we're not driving luxury SUVs. I mean, hell, we're rich gringos. We can afford it, right? So you can see the vast majority of them are thinking on a very superficial level. All they can think is that either we're eccentric or we're gringos down on our luck. And I say, good, let them think that. And after a while, when you make friends with certain local Latins, often their curiosity will get the better of them. And you just might get this question. How come you're not driving a Beamer or a Porsche or an upscale SUV? I've had this posed to me a number of times, and if I'm in the mood, I'll say something like, what, an expensive car, an SUV? Well, that's a stupid choice for a vehicle in Latin America. No thanks, I got over my materialistic phase back in the 80s in Chicago, and I like to think I'm not that stupid anymore. And typically, they don't like or understand my answer. Again, they just don't get it because this is an exceedingly materialistic society. The fact is, no matter how many times a Latin gets robbed or hijacked because he's a target in his standout upscale car or SUV, when they get their replacement vehicle, if they have the money or the credit, they'll always buy up, not down. Like I said, they just never learn. Down here, you are what you drive. So get used to it. The exception being, if you're a gringo and you're driving a small car or a beater, you're still considered by the locals to be at the top of the heap. A fortunate son, though a little eccentric. And that's okay with me. But where was I? Oh yeah. I was mentioning that expat Eddie said that when he hires private school graduates, they always eventually turn out to be a bit classist and racist. he can see how they look down on public school graduates, indigenous people, and people from the middle and lower classes. Like Eddie said, even in a tiny mall restaurant with only a handful of workers, there's a definite social and class hierarchy. And Eddie says, even if you think there isn't one, just hire one of these guys from a private school and see what happens. And that phenomena, Eddie says, unfortunately, cannot be trained or beaten out of them. And for proof of that, Eddie says that these private school manager type kids always seem to have a car. And he's noticed that these guys will almost never give lower class people a ride home, or even give them a lift to the nearest bus stop. Whereas Eddie's got those gringo sensibilities. No matter where he's driving, if he happens to spot one of his employees walking down the street, he'll always offer a ride. He, like most gringos, would feel guilty if he just whipped right by. And I know Eddie, he'll often go far out of his way to give a guy a ride, just so that person doesn't have to hop on a chicken bus. You'll find that's kind of a gringo trait, you know? Latins with cars are not likely to do that. So as it turns out, this embedded classist and racist thing, that's a personality defect that's heavily reinforced in Latin private schools. And it's the expat gringo teachers at these schools that are reporting that. But don't think for one second that gringo teachers are to blame. They're not. If anything, they're the ones that are trying to undo it. But no matter what kind of lip service is paid to it, it seems the whole private school system is set up to not so subtly let those kids know that they are superior and they are quite different from the huddled masses on the street who don't have maids and bodyguards and have to take the chicken bus. So as it turns out, the entitled kids at those private schools learn from their jaded parents that they're the chosen ones. Then that stereotype gets reinforced at school in spades. But back to expat Eddie's dilemma. He says that the average kid from public school who worked at another company or another place before he worked for Eddie will almost always be on mañana time unless he worked for a first world franchise beforehand. Or, get this, if he or she was a previously deported illegal alien. Because you see, in that case, when they were up in the States before they got caught, there's a very good chance they punched a time card or were on a U.S. time schedule. Now, you see, painting cars or doing drywall or gardening up in the States, if your boss sees you late one too many times, you're simply fired. So deported illegal aliens, well, they know from experience that gringo bosses just don't tolerate mañana time. And neither do workers who are coming from a gringo franchise operation like McDonald's or Burger King. They too know that you must be on time. Which brings us to Latin workers who previously worked for a Latin company or a Latin boss. Well, what can you expect when in Latin companies, even the bosses and the owners are on mañana time? Which is why Eddie ended up installing that bonus program. Like I said, at the end of the month, he gives out a $10 bonus for perfect attendance and no tardiness. He says it's a good system and it works like a charm, but unfortunately, 90% of the time, right after work, the bonus winners will run across the street with their friends and blow it all, guess where? At McDonald's. Which is why, in an undereducated society, it does no good to preach the evils of GMOs and Monsanto. There's going to be a long lag time on that one. Enough said about that. Which brings me to some of the emails I've been getting lately. Mostly questions about Ebola and that new one that's on everyone's tongue, chikungunya. Well, maybe it's not on everyone's tongue. You try saying it. Chikungunya or chikungunya, which comes from the bite of a regular mosquito, believe it or not. Now, the thing is, what's very important to remember is that down here in Latin America, any disease that's mosquito-borne is what you'd call a disease of the poor. Because, you know, if you walk around the poor and the lower middle-class neighborhoods, you'll find standing water everywhere. Just like in the ghettos you have up in the big cities in the States, there's all kind of junk and garbage and abandoned tires and cans and just a million breeding grounds for mosquitoes. But worse yet, why do you think that there's over 200,000 cases of chikungunya right now here in Latin America? Well, I'll tell you. It's the fact that the poor and lower middle classes here in Latin America don't even have glass in their windows. If you've ever seen the kind of tin roof shacks that close to 200 million Latin American people live in, you'll quickly notice that there's no weather stripping at all. I mean, why would they have it if they don't have glass in the windows, right? Now, when you see these little shacks, you can't help but notice that the corrugated tin roof sits on the wall, and where those corrugations rest, there are dozens of spaces wide open to the outside. You can see daylight through those big gaps. In fact, you could stick your hand through in 100 places in any one of these little dwellings. So what's that mean? Well, for something like 200 million people, there's no way to keep those mosquitoes out of the house. So then what happens when you get chikungunya? Well, you're laid up in bed for usually a week, and it can be accompanied by terrible joint pain, which in rare cases can last a month or so. But do note, almost no one ever dies from it. 99% of people recover completely. So then let's get some perspective on this. Now, generally, I personally hang in the altiplano. That's, you know, anywhere from 4 to maybe 8 or 10,000 feet above sea level. And unless you live by a lake or a river, there's hardly any mosquitoes up here. So that said, in my 20-something years down here, I've never met a single person who said chikungunya. Now, you should know that expat Eddie, who lives in El Salvador, does not live in the altiplano. In fact, he lives a little outside the capital city of San Salvador at about 2,000 feet above sea level. So he's pretty much got tropical weather all year round, but he's high enough up, so it's not terribly sweltering all the time, but still too hot for me. Anyway, I asked his gardener, who of course lives in one of those tin shack laminated houses, if he's seen a lot of chikungunya. And yes, he said he's seen a few cases. In fact, his uncle and his nephew had it. Then I asked him this. I said, about how many mosquito bites do you get in a week? I mean, he is a full-time gardener, so that is an occupational hazard, you know. And he said, maybe a dozen. And he said he manages to kill a couple dozen more a week before they ever draw blood. Then he laughed and said, they like me, but they love my wife. She's got, he said, sangre dulce, that's sweet blood. Anyway, do remember one thing. These grunt-working Latin guys, they never use any insect repellent. It's way too expensive. And like Eddie's gardener said, zancudos, which are mosquitoes, are a fact of life. No big deal. So here's why I asked him that question. Think of it. If this guy, a gardener, gets a dozen bites a week, that means he gets over 600 mosquito bites a year. Which, as it turns out, seems to be par for the course for any Latin that works outside and doesn't use any kind of repellent. So after the gardener mentioned that, expat Eddie and I thought about how many times we'd been nailed by a mosquito in the last week. As it turns out, we both had a grand total of 0 mosquito bites for the week. Then Eddie said, you know what? I don't think I get 2 in a month. And as for me, I think last month I had a total of 1 mosquito bite myself. So you've got 2 gringos like expat Eddie and I. We get maybe 10 to 20 mosquito bites a year, if that. And your local gardener who gets 50 to 60 times as many or more. In his case, over 600 a year. So now I ask you, what do you think your chances are of picking up something like chikungunya or any other mosquito-borne illness like dengue fever? Not likely. I wouldn't bet on it. And by the way, as far as dengue fever, which is much more severe, you may have heard of it. Well, again, in my over 20 years of living down here in Latin America, I've only known one person who's had it. And it was no gringo, not even a backpacker. It was a local. In fact, it was a girl who happened to be a Hawaiian tropic model whose job it was to walk around in a bikini all day on a beach handing out little sample bottles of Hawaiian tropic. Tough job, huh? Well, it turned out pretty tough for her because she said in the end she had so many mosquito bites she couldn't even count them all. Again, no repellent, just Hawaiian tropic. That said, what about Ebola in Latin America? Here's what the head of U.S. Southern Command, a branch of the U.S. military responsible for all U.S. military activities in South America and Central America, says. Quote, if it breaks out in Central America, there will be a mass migration into the United States. People will run away from Ebola, and if they suspect they are infected, they'll try to sneak into the U.S. for treatment. Then he says, I saw how easy it is for illegals to enter the U.S. In fact, while visiting the border of Costa Rica and Nicaragua with U.S. embassy personnel, I saw a group of black men waiting in line to pass into Nicaragua, making their way north to the U.S. The embassy person walked over and asked who they were. And they told him they were from Liberia and they had been on the road about a week. It turns out they met up with a network in Trinidad, and now they were on their way to the U.S., illegally, of course. And then he said the Liberian men could have made it to New York City and still be within the incubation period for Ebola. This, he said, is a nightmare situation for the U.S. All right, so the question is, should you be worried about Ebola in Latin America? Well, the fact is, every night on the news, and you see in the papers every day down here, that just like up in the first world, they're screening passengers arriving at the international airports with temperature sensors. For what good that's going to do. Anyway, bottom line here is, I think now, as of today, there is one Ebola case in Latin America, and it's in Brazil. And it might not even truly be Ebola. Now, remember, Latin America has over a half a billion people. And as one U.S. doctor, a guy on a charity mission down here, told me, he said if Ebola makes it here down to Latin America, the only people that are going to die from it are going to be the undernourished people with compromised immune systems. Again, he said it's a disease of the poor and uneducated. In fact, he's the guy that told me that in Africa where Ebola's hit and it's become an epidemic, when uneducated, superstitious Africans have a funeral in those countries, they hang around with the body and actually kiss it and touch it as part of the funeral ritual. In fact, he said, sometimes they stay in the same room with the body for a couple of days. Yep, that was a new one on me. Made me squirm a bit, you know? So anyway, as for us expats, gonna-bes and wannabes, no matter where we are, we should be paying more attention to personal hygiene. And one suggestion here, skip the handshake. Instead, do the ghetto fist bump. That'll work. That said, in the end, maybe God really does protect idiots, drunks, and children. And to that, maybe we should add backpackers. For all their bad habits and dozens of mosquito bites, still, somehow, backpackers rarely come down with anything worse than fleas, Montezuma's Revenge, and long-range BO. Okay, now that we're near the end of the show, my question to you is, do you have a plan B to fall back on when the next big crisis, financial or otherwise, rocks the first world and scares the living crap out of everyone? Well, if you don't have a concrete plan yet, you need to get your boots on the ground and come down to my week-long Expat Wisdom Seminar in Central America, January 2015. Just go to expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link, and get the full details.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.